and why. She'd replayed the images 1,000 times in her head. She remembered the sheen of the blade, where his hand should have been. The hand the Furia cut off. Because of me. A knot settled in her throat, and she had the feeling she might never be able to swallow it down. Longing stretched out within her. To go back, to change the way she'd handled things. With Grey, with his sister, with her cousins, with her kingdom. Stop it! There was no changing the past, only the opportunity to alter the untold future. She knew she had to forget about Grey Aris, at least for now. Ennis and Gaia were imprisoned because of her. That was what she needed to fix. "I want to speak to Bane," she said. Then, louder, "Guard! Get me Bane!" That tone. It was the Queen Rhea from Night's End, the woman who had gone into battle and emerged victorious. The captor, not the captive. Rhea the conqueror. Rhea the brave. One of the guards, who had been snoozing, snapped to his feet and scurried off. Is this who I am? Or am I the woman who stopped Darkspell from releasing his plague on the Four Kingdoms? The question nagged at her, even as she half expected the guard to return alone. To her surprise, however, it was Bane who appeared, a dark hood drawn over his hairless scalp. "You rang?" he said. Although it was still night, the air relatively cool, she could see the shine of sweat on his brow, a few trickles running down his pale cheeks. Something about him looked off, like he was sick. "You've refused to see me. Why?"
"I've been busy."
"With what?"
"Planning our attack on Fenir. They are scared. Our forces have amassed from the four cities."
"It is time. You have bigger problems. The Westerners and Easterners will march through the Southron gates in 3 days. Maybe less if they decided to change their plans. I can help stop them. But first you must release Ennis and Gaia. You have me. You don't need them."
Bane laughed, and Rhea felt a shiver run down her spine.
"You think I want to stop the attack from your allies?"
Rhea froze.
"What?
Foolish girl."
It felt like an insult coming from one as young as the murderer standing before her. Then again, Bane seemed older than his age, ancient in some ways.
"The Four Kingdoms can rip itself to shreds if it wants. I will not stop it. So long as, at the end, I am standing on the pile of corpses."
It struck her, the reason he was here, the reason he'd allied himself with a warmongering people such as the Phoenicians.
"You want to be High King," she said,
a grim smile.
"If that's what it takes to unite the lands and bring about peace, then yes.
But thousands will die."
"They would have died anyway. Sometimes there are those who must die in order for there to be peace."
Rhea remembered the quote from her research on the Western Oracle. A long-forgotten prophecy.
"You want to start over. As long as there are people like you, rulers like you, there will never be peace. Your arrogance and lust for power prevents it." "Then why haven't you killed me?"
"Because first I want you to see what the Lorenz have done, what you've caused. I want you to see your legacy of blood and death. Then, I expect, I won't have to kill you. Because you will kill yourself, and that foul creature growing inside of you."
Rhea's hand moved protectively to her belly.
"I will not."
"We shall see. Yes, we shall see."
He started to leave.
"Wait. When do we begin our march?"
He half turned.
2 days. When we are at full force."
54. The Southern Empire, Hemptown. Ennis Loren.
"Hit me,"
Ennis said to his sister.
Gaia looked at him like he was mad.
"En, I'm not going to—"
"Do it," he said. "As hard as you can. In the face.
Then hit me again. Kick me. Scream things like, I hate you, and worse. Curse, if you feel like it. N, do you trust me?
She bit her lip. Nodded.
Good. I have a plan. Now hit me.
She drew back her fist. Ennis had never seen Gaia hit anyone in her life. As a girl, she'd been studious, more into books than games, more interested in court dealings than war councils. She swung, her knuckles colliding solidly with his cheek, snapping his head back.
Oh, Roth, I'm sorry, En.
He shushed her, flexing his jaw.
Keep your voice down. This must be believable. Now hit me again and scream like you hate my guts.
She took a deep breath, and then hit him again, this time in the stomach.
She's stronger than she looks,
he thought, doubling over. He groaned.
I'm sorry,
he howled. Gaia shoved him back, shouting in a stiff voice,
Save your apologies for someone who believes you. Say it like you mean it,
Ennis hissed. She slapped him, hard.
You bastard,
she growled.
You Rothdam, rutting, no good bastard.
The venom in her tone took him by surprise. He'd never heard her swear before, but was glad she found it in herself now. He actually believed she hated him. The next hit spun him around. He could have kept his feet, but collapsed instead, groaning again. Gaia fell on him with both fists working in tandem, beating on his shoulders and back. A few of the shots hurt, and he no longer had to fake the groans.
What have I unleashed? He wondered.
Finally, he heard fast-moving boots approaching.
Prisoner! Stop hitting him!
Gaia didn't stop. Her screams were less intelligible, an angry rant of curses and insults flowing in a steady stream.
Good sister.
A clank as the cell door opened.
These are masters of Fenru,
Ennis reminded himself, gathering his energy. Do not underestimate them. Through the curtain of hair falling over his eyes, he glanced up. There were only two, a skeleton night crew.
Good. This is good.
One of them grabbed Gaia from behind, dragging her away while she continued to swing her fist and kick her legs, conjuring images of a wildcat. Ennis remained on hands and knees, his muscles tightening in preparation as the second guard approached.
Prisoner!
He barked.
On your feet!
Ennis felt bruised and sore, but he'd taken far worse in training. He'd suffered even worse injuries in battle. And this was for his sister, a thought that sent adrenaline through his system. Slowly, pretending to be beaten, his arms hanging awkwardly, his legs wobbling, he stood.
Separate them,
the guard said. His wrists weren't strapped with daggers, Ennis noted, though he held one in a tight grip and had another sheathed against his ankle. A whip dangled from his belt. The other guard started to march Gaia out. The moment his back was to Ennis, he sprang into action, slamming his heel into the first guard's knee, feeling the joint give as the bones moved in the wrong direction. Naturally, his fingers opened, and he dropped the knife. Ennis caught it on the way down, bringing it up in a single motion to slash the Phoenician's throat. Surprised, the other guard was already turning, bringing his own weapon to bear. Ennis raised the dagger, prepared for the knife fight of his life. Gaia kicked the guard in the back of the legs, and he fell forward. Ennis hit him in the jaw with an elbow, following through and slamming him back first onto the unforgiving ground. The guard's eyes widened, and blood trickled from his lip. Ennis slammed the knife into his chest, retracting it quickly and cleaning it on the man's leather armor. Gaia stared.
We had no other choice.
Before he could finish the statement, she threw herself onto the dead man, punching and scratching at him.
"Whoa!"
Ennis said, pulling her off from behind, subduing her arms. She spat on the guard and said,
"Let's go."
He couldn't argue with that. They stole into the night on flutter-soft feet. The streets were mostly empty, though Ennis could make out the shadows of soldiers patrolling the city. There would be watchmen, too, so they would need to stick to the shadows. Suddenly, he grabbed Gaia and dragged her into a narrow side street. It was not a moment too soon, as a guard emerged from the prison, swinging his gaze back and forth.
"Sound the alarm!"
he shouted.
"The prisoners have escaped!"
"Shite!" Ennis thought, backing away into the alley. Escaping the city would take a miracle now.
"We have to go back for Rhea,"
Gaia whispered in his ear.
"What?" "No, we are here because of her. She has done nothing for our family. She killed Jove, banished me. Her sea monster killed her own sister. It's not that simple, and she is pregnant."
"As if that helps her case."
"No, we're leaving. Now."
Heavy feet closed in from the main street. Soldiers, dozens of them. Fighting was not an option. Gaia set her feet and shook her head.
"Leave without me, then." "Who is this woman?"
"Gaia, please.
Look, we are alone and outnumbered. We have no chance of rescuing Rhea now. But if we can make it through the gates, if we can get back to Sai and Wheaton, an organized rescue?"
Ennis nodded, hating that he was forced to lie to his sister.
"All right, I'll go."
"Thank Roth." They hurried in the opposite direction, down the alley, pausing at the end as soldiers rushed past. Ennis's mind was buzzing. The odds were stacked against them. Recapture was inevitable. But then the unthinkable happened. The bells ceased to ring. Shouts filled the unexpected silence.
"Return to the prison!"
Surprised soldiers stopped running, shrugged their shoulders, and marched back from where they'd come. At the far end of the alley, Ennis could see a large group of them milling about, awaiting orders.
"Hurry,"
Ennis said. Together, he and his sister fled through the city unmolested. After a long while, they escaped its bounds, fleeing into the night, toward the massive wall rising in the distance. No alarms sounded. No shouts chased them. They were like ghosts haunting the night. 55. The Southern Empire, Hemptown. Bain Garrick.
"The prisoners can't have gotten far. We can still ride them down."
The captain of the guard was a strong-looking man, was probably a mighty warrior, but he wasn't a thinker. All action and no brains.
"No,"
Bain said.
"No?"
"Let them go."
I don't understand."
"I don't expect you to. Focus on Rhea Loren. Inform her of her cousin's escape. Give her plenty of food and water. Let her rest and think. We leave in 2 days."
"How many men?"
"All of them."
"But that will leave our rear unprotected. The gates—"
"The gates are broken. Let our enemies come. We will crush them all."
He waved his hand and dismissed the captain, who didn't question him further. That was the great thing about Phoenicians, and one of the many reasons he'd chosen them for his army. They were obedient to a fault, used to a strict chain of command. The moment they allowed him to lead them, it was over, their fates sealed. Bain wiped the sweat from his brow. He could feel the plague worming inside him. His mark flared in response, fighting an inner battle and trying to extend his life.
"If I can only survive long enough to defeat my enemies on all sides and show Rhone the truth."
Surely Rhone would use his own power to heal him. After all, his life-marked counterpart despised death almost as much as he seemed to hate war. Bain had no problem with death, not if it was for the greater good. But at least they had the hatred of war in common.
"This will be the last war," he thought.
"A necessary evil to achieve peace. And after the peacemaker healed him, he would rule the Four Kingdoms alone. Any who refused to make peace would be crushed." But before all of that, Bain knew he had another ruler to kill, one who should have died at the same time as his brothers, the last of an endangered breed, the last hoser, Falcon. Bane's death mark flared with heat, and he vanished. 56. The Western Kingdom, Cleo. Gareth Ironclad. Gareth was tired of waiting. Every day there was another delay, from a disruption in the Western supply train, to a bad case of a fever-inducing rash amongst the troops, to some sort of crisis in Bethany that needed to be dealt with. And on and on. Did he want to march into battle? Not particularly. But if Ennis Loren was somewhere south of the border, he wanted to try to find him. The man deserved it. even if the rescue attempt only resulted in recovering his body. Gareth had sent another request for an audience with King Regent Sy Loren, but had received no response. Twice he marched to the castle gates, and twice the Furia blocked his entry. Storming the castle would be folly, and risk the lives of his legionnaires. So he waited, and waited, until the sun fell beneath the city walls, and the sky darkened from purple to black. He knew he should eat something, but he wasn't hungry. Sleeping would help pass the time, but he wasn't tired either. Slowly, he climbed the steps to the top of the wall, hoping to see something other than the stone, armor, and flesh of a city packed with two armies. A western sentinel atop the wall stiffened when he saw Gareth, his grip on his bow a little tighter. "At ease, soldier," Gareth said. The man grunted a reply, and went back to scanning the horizon for threats. Gareth walked past him, selecting a spot to sit that was in between two of the watchmen. Secluded. He dangled his feet over the edge, thinking about friends. Gwendolyn. Rhone. From up here, he pretended like he'd be able to see them, if only he looked hard enough. Gwen somewhere to the southeast, seeking revenge. Rhone somewhere else, seeking knowledge. He wondered if either of them had found what they were looking for yet. He wondered if they ever would. At least they have goals, desires. What am I searching for? That was a question he knew he didn't have an answer to, which was why he was here. To keep moving was the only way to escape from the question. Now, however, he was stuck in place, his thoughts surrounding him like so many enemies. Once he'd been a boy, then a man, with a purpose, one he'd been born into. He was the shield, born to save the life of his brother. Gwen said, "You're the sword now." But what did that even mean? That he was alive only to end the lives of others? Or did she mean it more metaphorically, like he was supposed to use his blade to protect the realm? He spied something the moment before the cry arose from one of the silent watchers. His gaze had just happened to be on the exact spot where the movement occurred, a gap in the great Southron gates. A shadow shifting, grey to black to grey, moving quickly. It was still a great distance away, but the sentinels were now on high alert, passing the alarm from man to man until a loud bell clangored from within the city. More shouts followed, and then the stomping of feet as soldiers were called to arms. He knew he should make his way down the steps to command his own men, but he had generals for that, and anyway, this was the best vantage point to watch the events unfold. He pushed to his feet. Commanded by several red-clad Furia, archers streamed past and around him, training dozens of arrows on the shadow moving toward the city. No, he thought. Not shadow. Shadows. He could now make out at least two separate forms racing over the flat terrain, as if hunted by a vicious predator. Closer and closer they came, only slowing slightly as they reached the main city gate. Gareth leaned over to try to make out their faces, but there were blots of ink on a dark background. One of them pounded on the door. "I demand entry," the voice said, and something about it struck Gareth as familiar. He frowned, puzzling over the fact. "Do we shoot them?" one of the archers asked. A tall Furia stood between them, her hand raised in the air. If it fell, Gareth knew they would loose their arrows without delay.
"On my signal," she said with a low growl.
"Wait," Gareth said. "You don't even know who they are."
"They came from Thanes. They are the enemy. They are alone, you fool. They seek asylum."
The woman didn't take kindly to the insult, but still, she commanded her men to throw torches to the ground. Flaming arcs soon lit up the night, bouncing and juddering as they hit far below. Several guttered out on impact, but enough remained ablaze to create a circle of light.
"Step into the light," Gareth shouted.
The Furia glared at him, her thunder stolen. Gareth held back a victorious grin, barely. First one form shifted, and Gareth was surprised to find a woman, her hair long and brown. She wore a dirty, tattered dress. She looked up at them, her expression weary. Clearly, the voice hadn't been hers. The second form moved next. His clothes hung in shredded ribbons around his gaunt form. His beard was as thick as the tangled mess of hair atop his head. It wasn't until he looked up and Gareth met his eyes that he recognized him. Even then, it was like looking at a stranger wearing someone else's eyes.
"Don't shoot!" Gareth said. "I know him! Open the gates!"
His mind buzzing, Gareth reached the bottom of the steps before the gate had even started moving. Soldiers and Furia lined the city entrance. Finally, after what felt like an eternity, chains clanked, the heavy metal doors groaned, and they began to part in the center. They only opened wide enough for a single person to enter. As before, the woman was first, followed by the man. As soon as they were clear, the doors shuddered closed once more. The man stepped forward, then fell to his knees. No, not the man, for this was no stranger.
"Hello, Ennis. What brings you to Cleo?" Gareth said. "I could ask you the same."
Though his voice was familiar, there was something rougher in it now, harsher. "He's been through a lot in a short time. I know the feeling."
"Get them water and food. Prepare beds."
He said it to no one in particular, but men scurried off all the same, eager to obey orders from a king. Perks of the job. Surprisingly, the Furia didn't interrupt. Something struck him about the woman. Now that she was closer, the light of a dozen torches shining on her face, he could see the resemblance, even if her hair was several shades darker than her other relations.
"She escaped on the Forbidden Plains," the man had told him, when he'd inquired as to Rhea's whereabouts.
He'd asked the man how, and he'd said, "Her cousin helped her escape. Gaia." But if this was Gaia and she'd come from Fane's, then... "Where is Rhea Loren?" Gareth asked. Gaia closed her eyes and bit her lip. Ennis spat in the dirt.
"In Hemptown," he said. "Right where we left her. She's Bane's new pet."
57. The Western Kingdom, Cleo. Ennis Loren. Everything happened quickly after that. In truth, Ennis had never expected to set foot on Western soil ever again, but he'd had little time to enjoy it. Now he was placed on a cart with Gaia and driven through the city streets, escorted by a dozen dark-eyed Furia. Gareth Ironclad walked beside them, as if afraid they'd disappear if he let them out of his sight. Now he wished he'd been more willing to listen to Gaia tell him all that had transpired in the West after he'd been banished. But at the time, there'd seemed to be no point. But now, he was staring at his past in the form of a man he never thought he'd see again. "Why is he here? And how?" he wondered, though he knew there was only one answer. An answer that shocked him more than anything else. They must have made an alliance, the East and the West. Either Rhea and Gareth or Sai and Gareth. Either way, it was what he'd worked so hard for. What he'd sacrificed everything for. He felt a warm sense of satisfaction at the realization. Somewhere along the way, the promised water and food was brought, and they ate as they rode. Ennis took long, thirst-quenching chugs to wash down the handfuls of bread and meat he shoved in his mouth. Even Gaia, who had always been a dainty eater, tucked in with reckless abandon, oblivious to the grease and crumbs falling into her lap. Ennis had been to Cleo several times before, and barely took in the familiar city as it flashed past. If anything, it all felt like a dream. Finally, they reached the castle within the city, the gate already standing open. They were helped down and ushered inside, along a few short corridors and into the courtroom. Sai was out of the throne. "He's sitting the throne," Ennis thought, remembering how one of his other brothers, Jove, had done exactly the same. Just before he'd been murdered, in an instant, rushing down the three steps and across the great room, embracing first Gaia and then Ennis.
"I presumed you dead, brother," he said to Ennis. "You and the rest of the kingdom. But evidently I'm harder to kill than I look. Rhea told us everything."
He didn't know if that was true, but there was no harm in Sai thinking it. His brother had always liked to feel important, in control. He wasn't that different from Rhea in that way.
Rhea.
The name still tasted bitter in his mouth. And yet, his conscience felt dirty at leaving her behind.
She came to rescue you. She didn't have to do that. She's the one who banished you in the first place.
He was forced to push aside his inner argument when Gareth cleared his throat. He'd almost forgotten the Easterner was still there.
An alliance? Ennis asked.
For now, Sai answered. It was signed by Rhea before the truth came out and she was stripped of her rights to the crown.
Speaking of Rhea...
His brother's sharp eyes darted to Gaia, who flinched slightly.
Someone had to do something, she said. It wasn't right what you did to her, and you know it.
Right? There was mocking in Sai's tone now, something he'd perfected over the years.
And you think anything she's done since her coronation has been right? She saved Knight's End during the northern invasion,
Ennis blurted out, immediately wishing the words back.
Why am I defending her?
It was like a disease, this need to protect his cousin. But he'd been a fool for too long.
Anyway, it's over now. We are here, and Rhea is a captive in Fane's.
You said she was Bane's captive, Gareth said, finally piping up.
What?
Sai said. Brother, tell me everything. Leave nothing out. So he did, ending with the attack Bane and the Phoenician troops were planning against the rebels.
Interesting, Sai said.
We have to rescue her, Gaia blurted out. There were too many guards for us before, but now we have an army. We can march on Fane's, storm the city, and...
Sai raised a hand to silence her.
I am willing to forgive your betrayal, sister, as you were clearly not of sound mind, but she was sentenced to trade herself for Ennis. It didn't happen the way we thought it would, but...
Ennis, tell him. Tell him he is wrong.
Gaia was staring at him, but Ennis refused to meet his sister's eyes. Couldn't bear to see the disappointment in them.
Rescuing Rhea will cost the lives of many men. I'm sorry, brother. Both you and King Ironclad have come a long way for nothing. The Phoenicians will destroy themselves. There is no need to invade the south.
Gareth said,
Except to rescue your cousin, Rhea. Remember her?
Ennis was surprised to hear such words from one who'd been imprisoned by her for so long.
I am surprised you would defend her, Your Majesty. Perhaps I misjudged her.
You didn't. It was Sai who spoke now, playing with a gold ring adorning his index finger.
And yet, strangely, I find myself in agreement with the Easterner. This changes nothing. As soon as we are ready, we shall attack Fane's, but not to rescue Rhea. Their inner conflict will only improve our chances of victory. We must crush them once and for all.
58. The Southern Empire, Fenia. Jai Jaru. Despite Jai's efforts to keep the peace, tensions had continued to grow. Not just between the Phoenicians and the Terrans, but between Sonica's Black Tears and Emperor Falcon. Thus far, Falcon's attempts to persuade the Phoenicians to negotiate a new social structure had been fruitless. They were as stubborn as the day was long. Jai could see it wearing on Falcon, and yet his determination had not yet waned.
Last resort,
the young Emperor had muttered the last time Jai had seen him. He wasn't certain what that meant, but at least no one had died yet, and Falcon seemed to be getting stronger by the day, his recovery complete. The army was prepared to march to the Bloody Canyons, at least that was set in stone. Unfortunately, it also meant that the assault on the mine of Kiref would have to wait, but that couldn't be avoided. If they failed in the canyons, it wouldn't matter anyway. Their scouts had seen an increase of activity in Hemptown in the last few days, and were certain the invasion would begin shortly. The rebel forces needed to be in place well before the enemy.
And we will, Jai thought. In fact, Shanti had already left with a small force, hauling chariot wagons behind them. The chariots were piled high with barrels full of fire root powder. It was the entire supply left in Fenia. He still remembered her demonstration a few days earlier. She'd buried sacks of the flammable substance in shallow graves, running fast-burning fuses across the desert. One by one, she'd lit the fuses, counting off seconds in her head. At the penultimate moment, she raised her fist in the air and the charges had gone off in a series of explosions that opened craters in the terrain. It was just a test, but was still impressive. She'd explained how, when the same was replicated in the Bloody Canyons, shards of metal and sharp stones would be included with the sacks of powder. Shrapnel, to expand the deadly reach of the explosions. "We'll take any advantage we can get," Jai thought, thankful he had Shanti as an ally. His armies were stretched before him in perfect formation, 10,000 strong, plus a number of the slaves from the mines who'd chosen to join them. They were at the mouth of one of the northward-facing canyons, the shadows still deep as the sun struggled to break over the high cliffs. The urge to give all the slaves a choice flared inside him once more, but he feared a high percentage of the trained soldiers would leave, joining the multitudes who were already flocking to the ships prepared to sail for Terragon. If that happened, the Phoenicians would defeat them. Slavery would be reinstated, and the slave ships would return to Terragon to round up those who had fled. That can't happen. His justice mark flared in agreement. All eyes were on him. He scanned the area, searching. Where is Falcon? Where is Sonica and her tears? Though Falcon would remain in Phinia and continue to reason with the Phoenicians, he still expected him to come see the army off. Sonica, too, even though her black tears wouldn't ride out until the morrow. He spotted Morella, running along the edge of the mass of soldiers. Her face was unreadable as she approached, stopping before him. "What is it?" Jai asked. His justice mark was firing now, sensing the wrongness in the air.
"Sonica," she gasped. "They're going to begin executing Phoenicians."
Jai fired an order for the army to wait, and then took off running. He found them, like he had before, except this time two of the black tears held Falcon, who was struggling futilely. Another two tears held one of the Phoenicians. Jai remembered the man. He'd been one of the most vocal during the last encounter. Sonica Vade stood before him, holding a long blade. There were already two dead Phoenicians off to the side, Jai realized, horrified.
"Denounce slavery and live," she said.
The man spat in her face. Slowly, she wiped the slime from her cheek. Jai took a step forward, about to speak, to shut this whole thing down. Sonica's blade moved like a spear thrust, impaling the man's heart, bursting from his back. She wrenched it back and her tears released him. He slumped, dead before he hit the ground.
"What have you done?" Jai said.
Sonica turned.
"What you were unwilling to. These people only understand force, power. Talk is getting us nowhere. This was the only option. Either they join us or they die."
Jai felt his mark pulse, but not fully. There was justice in this, but that didn't make it right.
"Are you going to kill them all? Is that the plan?"
"If that's what it takes." He knew she wasn't exaggerating. Sonica Vade was a strong woman, a woman he respected. But she'd also been through a lot. Lost her parents, her brother. Watched her people treated like dogs. Jai understood the anger she felt. He felt it too. And now she saw the enemy laid low. She was ready to bury them. But everything had changed, and their tactics needed to change too.
"They can't hurt us any more," Jai said. "We need to give Falcon another chance. Let him go."
Sonica narrowed her eyes at the Emperor.
"I know you think he's different, but he's not. He was as much of the problem as anyone. He's a hoser. This is his world, has been for years. So long as he lives, the Phoenicians will cling to the hope that the old world can be restored. I can't let that happen."
"I understand, but you're wrong. Falcon was trying to survive, just like the rest of us. He almost died because of it." Falcon finally spoke.
"I agree with Sonica," he said.
Jai was incredulous. He might not know the Emperor as well as Shanti, but this didn't sound like him at all.
"You want to kill all these people?"
your people.
Not execute them. That's where Sonica is wrong. But I will fight them. Each and every one, if necessary.
Sonica frowned.
It's a trick.
No trick, Falcon said. Put me in that prison. Lock the gate. I will either emerge with what you want, or not emerge at all.
Jai said, no. At the same moment, Sonica said, fine.
Jai shook his head. This is madness. I received a response from Calypso, Falcon said. One word.
The change of topic took a moment for Jai to catch up to.
What word?
No,
Falcon said.
Viper said no.
The Calypsians will not come to help us.
Jai's heart sank. Yes, they had an army of more than 10,000. But against the armies of the four cities it wouldn't be enough, especially with their new weapons.
You're saying we could use some more bodies, Sonica said. I say we force a lot of them to march into the bloody canyons. We can use them like a human battering ram. Falcon can be at the front if he has a death wish.
Falcon said, I will do that if necessary. But first, let me in that cage.
Jai didn't know what to do. His two allies were on opposite ends of the spectrum, and yet they both believed drastic measures were necessary. He couldn't always control people, even if he wanted to.
Fine. Do what you will. I have an army to lead into battle.
With that said, he turned and walked away, a sick feeling churning in his gut. 59. The Southern Empire, Fenia. Falcon Hoser.
They despise me,
Falcon thought, as he stepped into the enormous cage.
All of them.
The looks they gave him weren't dissimilar to that of the freed slaves. Dark, angry.
How can I unite two peoples who not only hate each other, but hate me, too?
Already most of the free slaves were planning to leave Fanes forever. And the Phoenicians? They were prisoners, unwilling to change even in exchange for their own freedom. For once, he knew he needed to rely on the things his father had taught him. About power. About these people.
They respect nothing but strength. They fear only that which can kill them. Everything else is noise.
Falcon said,
You think I am weak, that I have failed you?
You have,
one of the Phoenicians said. He recognized the man with the drooping moustache. He'd been an advisor to the Emperor for many years. Poi Fett.
Then kill me, Falcon said.
It was the last thing the man seemed to expect him to say, and for a moment his certain expression faltered, before resuming its sneer. He gestured to two of the larger men standing at his sides.
Kill him.
No,
Falcon said.
You kill me. Or send your thugs one at a time. I will fight all of you if I must. I will kill all of you.
He hated his own words, but the answer to the riddle of the Phoenicians wouldn't be found in any of his books. This was reality. Behind him, Sonica said,
This is ridiculous, Falcon. Come out of there. Let me handle this.
He ignored her.
If any of you can defeat me in single combat, then I will give you your slaves back. Everything will return to how it was.
What?
Sonica said.
You don't have the authority to—
I am the Emperor,
Falcon said, whirling on her.
Not you. Not Jai. Me. This is my empire, and I will decide what will be.
Her eyes narrowed.
Then you will die.
You cannot defeat them all. Falcon knew she was right, but he also knew he didn't need to.
Just enough to force them to respect me the way they respected my father.
He nodded and turned away.
Who's first?
He asked. One of the thugs stepped forward. Bane. Bane watched the confrontation with keen interest. The masses of Phoenicians were so focused on Falcon Hoser that none of them noticed when he appeared off to the side. Beneath his cloak, he fingered his dagger.
Wait, he thought. Let this play out. Perhaps they will do your work for you.
He eased around several of the larger men to get a better view. One of the Phoenicians was circling Falcon, his hands fisted in front of him. Despite his size, he moved with an easy grace, a born fighter. He swung a lazy punch, testing the waters. Falcon dodged it easily, bouncing on his toes. The next attempt was fierce, a hooked punch that caught Falcon on the jaw, rocking him back. Bane expected him to fall. He did not, only spitting out a wad of blood and resuming his stance. He knows how to take a hit. When his opponent attacked again, Falcon darted left and then barreled forward head first, using his skull like a spear, punching into the man's gut. He gasped and fell backwards. Falcon drove him into the ground, unleashing a torrent of blows to his head and abdomen. Bane saw several of the Phoenicians try to break free to help, but the man who'd exchanged words with Falcon shouted them back.
"Strange people," Bane thought. "All that matters is the end result, not how you get there."
They could kill Falcon so easily, but for some reason they stuck to some bizarre code of honor.
"Honor amongst slavers," he thought wryly.
Finally, Falcon arose, his knuckles blooded and his face a mask. The man on the ground wasn't moving.
"Who's next?"
he asked. Dozens of people pushed forward, eager now. Falcon. 12 men were dead because of him, leaving an ill feeling in the pit of his stomach. Falcon was weary, one of his eyes swollen shut, his jaw aching. His knuckles were dripping blood, some his, some from those he'd defeated. The line of opponents only got longer and longer. Poi was somewhere in the middle, but he never seemed to move closer to the front.
"He is the key," Falcon thought. "He is respected amongst the people. If I can kill him or persuade him to stop this madness..."
Maybe there was a chance.
"Falcon,"
Sonica said. He'd avoided looking at her for a while now. He didn't want to see the disgust on her face, because he knew it was warranted.
"Maybe we are the barbarians she thinks us to be. Maybe we all do deserve to be slaughtered."
Again, he ignored her, focusing on the task at hand. His next challenger, a tall, wiry fellow with close-set eyes, performed an aerial maneuver, lashing out with his right foot. Falcon had learned the very same move, as well as how to defend against it, years ago, but his body was becoming more and more sluggish. He was a beat too slow to counter, and the man's heel caught him in the jaw. He bit his tongue, blood pooling in his mouth. Something hard clinked, and he spat out a tooth. He wondered whether he would have any left when this was all over. The fighter followed up with a leg sweep, and this time Falcon managed to leap over it, swinging his arms into a modified cartwheel, landing with both feet at once and springing away. Then he went on the offensive, throwing up a slow right kick he wanted to be blocked, which it was, and using his forward momentum to jab an elbow into the man's throat. He gagged, clutching at his neck, and Falcon slammed the heel of his hand into his nose. Blood exploded outward, splattering his face, but Falcon barely noticed, pushing forward to knee him in the gut and chop down on the back of his head. Bane Garrick. Another man went down, and Bane was beginning to grow bored. Perhaps this was part of the Phoenician culture, but he found it to be brutal and pointless. Such behavior explained a lot about why the Four Kingdoms had been at war for so long. He moved through the crowd, shoving bodies out of his way. One man tried to push him back, but he grabbed his arm and jerked it hard to the side, snapping his wrist. The man howled. Bane pressed on, drawing his dagger as he approached the front. Falcon had just defeated another opponent, a big man who'd fallen as easily as a felled tree, and the Emperor turned back to the crowd. He gestured for his next foe to step forward. Bane strode forward, shoving an over-eager Phoenician away. Falcon said, "Who are—" But Bane wasn't in the mood for talk, lashing out with his blade and cutting off the question. He was impressed by Falcon's ability to switch gears, ducking the killing stroke and sliding gracefully away. But that wouldn't change the result. He stalked forward once more, faking left and slamming his fist into the Emperor's head. It sent Falcon reeling back, blinking furiously. Dimly, Bane was aware of the doors clanking open, a shout from the Phoenician rebel woman preceding her arrival.
He moved faster, his death mark burning like a lit torch on his scalp. Falcon tried to spring backwards on his hands, but Bane caught him with a kick to the chin, toppling him.
"This ends now," he thought, firing forward, slicing down with his knife.
Falcon rolled. The blade slammed into the stone floor, sending shivers up his arm. Suddenly, Bane felt weak, like he'd run a long way without food or water. He focused on the pulsing of his death mark, but he could feel that snake inside him, wriggling, trying to clamp around his heart. Shavos' final gift. The plague.
"No,"
he growled, more to himself than anyone else, fighting to his feet, kicking Falcon in the face as he tried to stand, switching his dagger from one hand to the other, slashing it left to right in an arc that would open the Emperor's throat and end him the way he'd ended his father. Pain exploded from his side and his fingers opened, releasing his weapon, sending it clattering to the floor. Shocked and horrified, he clutched his ribcage, blood spilling between his fingers. Silver flashed on the edge of his vision, and it was only a combination of animal instincts and the speed provided by his death mark that saved him, allowing him to duck as the blade cut past, disturbing the air where his head had been a moment earlier. Sonica Vade, however, was not to be deterred. She kicked out, catching him in the chest. She moved like a combination of air and water, graceful in a liquid sort of way. Her movements were a violent dance, and Bane could feel his weakness slowing his response. This had all gone wrong, and he had no choice left but to retreat. But first, a threat.
"I command the four cities now," he said. "I will bring them down upon your heads like hammer on anvil. None shall survive."
That said, he commanded his death mark, strangely looking forward to being back in Hemptown with his soldiers, men who believed he was someone worth fighting for. Nothing happened.
"What the?"
Sonica seemed to sense his confusion, lashing out with another kick, which she managed to slip away from, barely. Her blade sung again, slashing across his shoulder, cutting deep. His side ached, blood flowing freely. His chest felt like it had been crushed by a hammer. And now his shoulder stung. He stumbled backwards, trying to put distance between himself and the woman who'd turned him from predator into prey. A human wall blocked his retreat, shoving him forward.
"This is it," he thought.
The balance between his mark of power and the plague had finally tipped away from him, and he was plummeting into darkness.
"How can this be the end? How can everything I've done, everything I've gone through, be for naught? And what of the Western Oracle's prophecy? I am supposed to change the world."
Sonica thrust her blade forward like a spear, and it was all he could do to sidestep it. He had not thought of a counterattack, pushing all of his strength into his death mark, which flared in response. Nothing happened. Still, nothing happened.
"I'm too weak. I'm too—"
he roared, beating his own chest, not caring that it was bruised and battered, allowing the pain itself to give him energy, to allow him to break free. The world spun and vanished. Falcon.
"How am I not dead?"
Falcon thought. Everything was foggy. He knew he'd managed to dodge one killing blow, but the second was inevitable, until it wasn't.
"Her."
He stared at Sonica, who finally looked away from the spot where Bane had vanished. Her eyes met his. He opened his mouth to say something, though he wasn't sure what exactly. But she shook her head. The Phoenician advisor, Poi, stepped forward.
"That was Bane," he said.
Falcon said,
"Yes. He killed your father."
There was no point denying it. He nodded.
"He tried to kill you. The last hoser."
He said the last word with a reverence that had been absent from his tone before.
"He failed,"
Falcon said.
"Because of me, you fools,"
Sonica said.
"While you were measuring your own manhoods, I was doing something productive. It will take women to fix this empire."
Poi was not to be deterred.
"That was Fen, sir?"
he asked.
"Yes, a modified version."
"You can teach it to our women?"
Her brows knitted together.
"They already know it.
They simply must change their way of thinking. Why are you asking me this?
Poi said, I will convince the others to fight. This is our empire. We won't let an outsider to conquer us with our own soldiers.
Falcon forced strength into his legs, moving to Sonica's side. She eyed him with interest. He wiped blood from his face.
And what of the Terrans? The Dreadnoughters? Those who have been enslaved for years? What will you do with them when the day is won?
Poi sucked his teeth, closed his eyes, grimaced slightly.
If they stay in Fanes, perhaps we can change. I make no promises, as each man and woman must decide for themselves. But I can promise that we will try. I will try.
It was good enough for Falcon.
Good. Now we must prepare for war. We will need every able-bodied person over the age of 16.
His eye met Sonica's, and she nodded. 60. The Southern Empire, Hemptown. Bane Garrick. Bane wished she was here, the one who had made him, had given him his mark of power. Not his mother, Sabria Loren, who he'd never known, but another mysterious woman, the Western Oracle. He hadn't bothered to open his eyes since he returned to Hemptown. He was exhausted, but sleep wouldn't take him. He felt lost and alone.
I am alone. I am lost.
But he was also alive, though his wounds were painful. His death mark had saved him, and even now it was feeding off the last of his reserves to heal his injuries, stopping the flow of blood, knitting his flesh back together. Not that it mattered.
It's over, he reasoned,
feeling himself falling once more into despair.
I should kill you,
a voice said, startling him. Rhea stared at him, her eyes hidden beneath a shroud of long, dark lashes. Her scar was a series of glistening slashes against her smooth cheeks. Bane wondered why his mark had brought him to this particular spot, in the cell of his prisoner. He shook his head, not really caring about the answer to that question either.
Then kill me, Bane said. Get your revenge. They will kill me. Your soldiers, she said.
Yes, he agreed.
Do you deserve less?
Her answer came without hesitation.
No, but my child does.
She gestured to the bulge of her stomach beneath her clothes.
Your child is better off never being born.
Rhea crawled closer. He could let her wrap her hands around his neck, let her squeeze.
What happened to you?
She gestured to the wound in his side, still slick with blood, though the skin and muscle were healed. He laughed.
I lost. Again. I feel that is all I do. I've failed the Four Kingdoms for the last time.
She seemed to chew on that.
You,
she took a deep breath,
killed my father. Why?
He refused to consider peace.
He was a good man,
she growled.
He didn't deserve to be murdered. You killed dozens of guards, too.
Bane couldn't deny it. Half the time he didn't know why he did the things he did, only that the compulsion to kill was a thorn in his chest, pricking, always pricking.
I'm sorry. It is I who should never have been born.
Rhea cocked her head to the side.
You believe that?
He nodded, his eyes never leaving hers.
Then there is hope for you, she said.
Finally, she turned away from him, staring between the bars.
God!
For some odd reason, Bane felt lighter after talking to Rhea, after the honesty they shared.
Maybe this wasn't over yet.
He grew weaker by the day, but that only meant he needed to act sooner. A swift resolution was the only hope for peace. He stood, striding toward the door as the guard appeared, unlocking it for him. He would sleep for many hours, and then he would march to war. 61. The Southern Empire, Fenir.
Falcon Hoser.
Why?
Falcon asked. The Phoenicians were organizing themselves into battalions. Those officers who had survived the rebellion took charge quickly. Poi made certain each person, both men and women, who wanted to fight, promised not to harm any of the freed slaves. The first priority was the force gathered against them. After that, the social structure of New Phania could be discussed. Sonica looked at him differently than she had before. Her expression was still hard. He figured it had been that way for a long time, but thoughtful, too.
"You were willing to risk your life for our cause," she said simply. "That's good enough for me."
Falcon allowed himself a smile, though his lips still tasted metallic.
"I love this empire."
When Sonica frowned, he rushed on.
"Not what we've done, the decisions we've made, the people we've hurt, but the land itself, the spirit that is still here. My father cast a darkness over us, but that doesn't mean the sun won't rise again."
"You should get cleaned up,"
she gestured to his eye.
"Get your injuries tended to by a healer."
"No," Falcon said. "There's something else I have to do first."
Falcon had been informed that Jai's army had already departed for the Bloody Canyons.
"Good," he thought. "It is better this way."
After asking Sonica and her Black Tears to stay behind, to ensure the Phoenicians followed through on their promise to prepare for battle, he marched out into the streets of the city. He was not surprised to find thousands of Terrans nestled between the canyons, many of them hauling supplies on their shoulders, pushing heavily laden wagons and carts.
"They could have easily stolen horses to pull them," he thought. "They didn't."
That recognition gave him a swell of hope, even as he listened to the shouts above the din. One shouter was a thick-necked man of perhaps 50 years old.
"Let no Terran remain in this absence forsaken land," he said. "Return to the land of our mothers, our fathers. Return to where our god died of sadness. That is all that is left for us. We have nothing here. Nothing."
The other shouter responded, though her words came out more desperate, as if she knew they were falling on deaf ears. It was Morella, the woman who'd been a slave in Garadia Mine under Jai Jiru's rule.
"We have a chance to build something new," she said. "This is our home now. Our children were born here. Our brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers, have died here. We have fought for our freedom. Now is our chance to make Fane's our empire."
She was largely ignored, though a small crowd had gathered where she stood atop an overturned crate. Several of the Terrans had noticed Falcon now, and he could sense the anger in their stares. He represented the institution that had oppressed them. The urge to turn and flee back inside the palace was strong. He could return to his quarters, unfurl his bedroll on the floor, open a good book.
No.
That was the old him, hiding between stories of better men, true champions of lore and legend. He had to be more than that scared boy, more than his father, his brothers, had expected of him, more than a pretender.
"More than these people expect of me."
His body ached and his eye throbbed as he stepped forward, clearing his throat.
"Don't leave," he said.
It came out far too soft, and only a few heads turned in his direction. He tried again.
"Don't leave."
More heads turned, and then the murmurs began, rippling through the throng like the aftermath of a stone dropped in a still pool. Slowly, the rush of activity ground to a halt, as the attention focused on him, a Phoenician, a Hoser, just standing there.
"You are no longer our master,"
the man on the box said with disgust.
"I never was," Falcon said. "No man or woman shall have a master in these lands. Not ever again." "Powerful words, but how can we believe them?"
"Because they're true," Morella said, her voice full of more confidence now. "Everything has changed."
"Not the Phoenicians," the man said. "They cannot live without their slaves." "My face says otherwise," Falcon said. "Your own people did that to you?"
the man scoffed.
"Yes,"
and I did worse to them. I killed many before they agreed to fight for you."
The man's eyes narrowed.
"For us? They would not fight for slaves.